So, hi, my name is Kevin, and I'm going to be taking you on this very weird and eclectic journey into Azure Media Services. So, hopefully you're going to have fun. So I just want to do a bit of an introduction to start off with. It's a big topic, and I'm coming at it from a particular direction, so I'm not going to be terribly offended if you all get up and exit, because this isn't the talk that you're after. So I just want to put this up here and make sure that we're all in the right room. Well, I know I'm in the right room. Make sure you're in the right room. So I know this for some reason has been classified as a developer topic, I believe, but this is purely architecture, right? I'll tell you a bit about me on the next slide. I am not a technology guy in the least. And so this is, you know, I would not know the first thing about code. This is purely an architecture topic, right? Having said that, I think that's fine, because this is a big topic and there's zero point in me getting down to code in it. And I'm not a big believer anyway in Ignite talks that have lots of code in them. And I apologise if there's any other speakers in the room. But I think you guys want to come here to learn what technologies can do, whether you should use them, you know, and code is kind of of little help to you, I believe personally. But anyway, there you go. So there's not going to be demos. A demo of Azure Media Services is a bit like, hey, there's a video playing. So I don't think we'll bother with that. And despite the fact there might be videos, there won't be videos. Right? So this is just going to be me talking from one end of Azure Media Services to the other over the next hour or so. Right? So I want to cover, well, I'm going to cover, hopefully, what Azure Media Services is for. So I'm going to spend a bit of time on that. Why would you use it instead of something else like YouTube? So I want to spend a bit of time on what video is for inside an enterprise, what video is for between an enterprise and its customers, and why media services might be the right product for you to use. Because there are plenty of choices. We want to make sure that you're using it for the right reasons. And I'll go through the overall architecture, what on earth it is, and what all its bits are, go for a relatively deep dive through the various pieces, and there's a long kind of pipeline that a video goes through, or media goes through, from being created to ending up on someone's Xbox at the other end, right? And so I'll go through that process of how it gets there, and all the different pieces of the puzzle, and all the things you can do along the way to it, right? Without getting terribly codey. Talk about how you build solutions on top of it, what you would use it for inside your organisation, and some hints and tips and stuff that we've found along the way from using it. Okay? So, I think it's sometimes, I haven't been a speaker for a while at Ignite or TechEd, so I thought it would probably useful just to put up just a little bit about me, because I think sometimes it's helpful to know who's on stage and what perspective are they coming from. And really what I wanted to say there was, it's been a long time since I did code, back in like Windows XP days, right? And I've done a journey of architect and manager and now run my own company. And so that means, that's many ways of saying, I'm really coming at this from a particular perspective. And also, WildMouse, being a business that is mostly focused on, if you like, being a digital agency of sorts, plus other stuff, right? But we're coming at it from that perspective of what would you use video for in a marketing perspective. So if you're in the room for that reason, then I'm probably the right person. But I'm also coming at it from the what do you use video for anyway perspective. Okay, so having said that, I kind of already covered this. Look at Azure Media Services. Why would you use it inside your business or your organisation, whatever your organisation might be? Why would you use it outside? What it does, the publishing pipeline, which is the process of putting video in and getting it back out again, and so on. Okay, so why Azure Media Services and why not something else? And in fact, the place to start there is why video in the first place, right? So video today is, is the benchmark for the new internet. Right? So the YouTube is, what is it, the second most popular search engine? Is a tremendously popular video platform, is a tremendously popular website in its own right, and is the place that people automatically go to find things increasingly today. And that speaks a lot for why video, right? Video is the most easy to consume content for the general public at large and for the staff inside your organisation, right? It is so much easier to consume than the written word, and hence that's why, you know, Google, for example, promotes video content over other kinds of content. So, you know, it's very much the case that if your site isn't using video, then you're missing out. And it's very much the case inside your organisation, I'll go through this in more detail, that if you're not using video to communicate to your employees, you're doing it probably the least effective way. Right, so video has become the benchmark, right? And we can see that also from the you know, the rapid increase in the amount of podcasting that's going on, and the numbers of viewers that popular podcasts are getting. Not that Media Services is a podcasting platform, but you know, the fact that popular podcasts now have audiences in the millions is an indication that video itself has become such a popular way of consuming content. Now, Media Services, by the way, does audio as well. It doesn't have to do video; it can do audio too. But just, you know, focusing on video there. Okay. So here's a. I'll let you guys go through the slide, right? But this is a recent survey of a whole pile of different businesses. On where they're using video, right? So, and hopefully your organisations are in the same boat, right? So hopefully video has become a mainstay of what you're doing, but you know, there's plenty of organisations, I guess, where it's not. But certainly you can see that what from quarterly calls up, at least half of all organisations are using video. So. I guess a show of hands. Whose organisations here would be a moderately heavy user of video?
Education industry.
Well, yes, education industry. Yep. Okay. Cool. Good. And what industry are you in?
Digital signage.
Digital signage. Right. Okay. Cool. I'll talk about that. Yeah. All right. So. So that's and you know, I guess if we kind of narrow that down then, and we look at the top applications for business video. If we kind of roll those top ones up, this really ends up with these key set of things, right? So, advertising and public content, digital signage, right? But also external advertising for employee portals and corporate communications, right? So, and I'll talk a bit about why you would want to use video in preference to other things for employee portals and some of the opportunities that exist today around that. Webcasting and live town halls, that's the very traditional use, right? So I think even in organisations where there's not a lot of corporate video done, the CEO still likes to stand in front of a camera and talk to the troops, right? So that's a common one. E-learning and training and digital marketing, right? Now, Azure Media Services is perfect for all of those. There's some instances where I wouldn't use it, and I'll talk about that, but that key set of things there, that is the key use case for Azure Media Services. And it does all of those really well. Okay, so. All right, so Azure Media Services really, to empower all those things we saw on the previous slide there, Azure Media Services really provides a set of services that are really depicted on this slide, and we'll drill into this in more detail, right? So at the top is the hopper into which you can place pretty much any form of video or audio content that you want in pretty much any format that it might happen to come in, right? So you whack that in the top. It has a set of processes that happen on the way through, and then it spits it out at the bottom through streaming to pretty much any device that you want. So down the bottom, there's a couple of things that are going on there. Firstly, you know, we've got an indication of the kinds of devices that can consume Azure Media Services. So that includes, you know, as you can see there, right, anything from Apple, anything from Android, anything from Microsoft, any browser, so pretty much anything from an iPod to a PlayStation can consume media services, because it's able to output and input in pretty much any format and then output in a range of formats and in a range of different mechanisms that allow pretty much any device today to consume what it can produce. And the other thing that you'll see from down the bottom is some of the things that are on those screens. So Azure Media Services has been used to do the worldwide streaming for the Winter Olympics, for the Commonwealth Games, for the Super Bowl, for a number of really big, the last FIFA World Cup was streamed over Azure Media Services. So, and then a number of other, you know, things like Channel 9, for example, on MSDN is run, not surprisingly, by Azure Media Services. So it has the capability and capacity to stream massive scale of content. It's not cheap to do that, obviously. You know, this is, you know, but it is a highly scalable technology. Right. And I'll talk on the way through where some of that cost gets incurred, by the way, just because it's important to know where the processes actually do spend money. But the important point that we're, you know, to cover out of that slide really is massive amount of content can be streamed out of it, way more than anyone would ever want to do in Australia. Right? So there's ever any, you know, there are zero questions about the scalability of the product for what we would want to do with it here. You know, it would gobble up the AFL Grand Final or the NRL Grand Final, you know, without any hassles at all. All right, so I'm kind of drilling down into kind of going deeper and deeper in terms of detail. So just before I jump into why would you use it in detail and look at the internal and external kind of scenarios, just a quick run through the architecture of the product, right? So as depicted in the stuff that happens on the cloud, the stuff that happens inside Azure, right? You upload content into it and it has a set of mechanisms and tools, and I'll go into detail in each of these, as a set of mechanisms and tools for uploading and storing video or media content. Then, once the content's in there, you encode it from whatever format it was in into a format that media services can work with to stream it back out the other end. You put content protection on it, or DRM, so that people can't rip off your content. If you're happy with people ripping off your content, you put it on YouTube. And then you have, then there's a streaming mechanism for, you know, getting it out to all the devices that are watching it. And the player mechanism itself is also, within the Microsoft circles, is part of Azure Media Services. So the players that come on, the raw player that comes on Windows 8, Windows 10, Xbox and so on, is actually the Media Services player. And then they can do other things, but is actually the Media Services player. Okay, so I just want to go through firstly, so what is internal streaming for? Why should you be doing media internally? And internal media is a really key scenario for Azure Media Services, naturally, because it's the kind of content that you want to protect. Right? So really, media services, when it comes down to it, there's a few things that it does well, and one of the key things that it does well is protect your content. Because it is like having your own streaming environment, your own version of YouTube that is inside your firewall. Or in effect, it's inside your firewall because it's on Azure and you can block that part of Azure off. Right? And I guess you can, you know, you could also do this stuff on premises, by the way. So a lot of the Azure Media Services technology has been around for a while in, streaming media server, I think it was, on Windows NT and so on, is where it's come from. So you could do it on premises, but you know, this is a perfect cloud scenario, and it really shines when you want to protect your content. So the kinds of scenarios for internal, and by that I mean, not only can you apply DRM to it so that somebody can't copy it and run away with it, but you can also make it so that people can't view it unless they have authorized access. So you can, you know, you have to log into the portal to be able to, or you have to log into Azure Media Services to be able to view the content, right? So the kinds of scenarios for internal use, the ones I really want to focus on is just to get us all thinking about what it means now that pretty much every device has a camera in it, and pretty much every device can record, and every device can record well. Given that for a lot of staff, writing good documentation is really hard, and writing, you know, training materials for other people to use is really hard, media, video is a great way of democratizing all of that within your organization. So allowing staff to be able to record their own content to be able to upload to what is effectively your intranet is a really powerful thing, right? And you are going to get far more content out of that than you will ever get out of empowering people to write stuff, because people just won't write stuff. But people are now very used to even creating their own YouTubes, but certainly to Skype and video conferencing and things like that. And they're not frightened of sitting in front of a computer and talking today. So you're going to get a lot more content out of people if you do that. Right? And that's the, that's, you know, there's some obvious scenarios I'll talk about on the next couple of slides. But the one that I really wanted to impress on everybody to really think about is, okay, could we use this content? What could we use this technology for? And the real thing you can use it for is to get, you know, unless you've got a use case already like digital signage, the real thing you can use it for is to empower your staff to share. And video is awesome for that, right? It is the best way of getting your staff to share. So on top of that, right, I just want to make sure I've got everything. Okay, and then on top of that, you've got some obvious scenarios, right? So so training and training content is, you know, I think just about every organization has worked out today that in room, you know, in situ training is expensive and difficult to run, right? Whereas video training that people can consume when they want to consume it, people can take home with them on their mobile device or whatever, is a much better way of getting that content out there, of getting training materials out there and getting people to consume them. Now, media services does allow your organization to publish content that people can put under their own device and only watch on their own device and not give to anyone else. So it does allow you to secure content so somebody can watch it on the train on their iPhone or whatever phone, and it will still remain safe and in your hands. So so as a mechanism for training, it is an extremely effective tool. And I think one of the most common scenarios for any organization that is looking at video content, then this is key. And then the other probably obvious one is webcasting and town halls or whatever it is that your organisation calls it when the boss wants to stand up and talk to everybody. And I know that a lot of organisations will invest significantly in infrastructure to do that. And again, because media services, because it runs on the cloud, has all the benefits of the cloud. So you can scale it up for the quarterly presentation from the CEO and then scale it back down again when it's not being used. Right. So from a cloud perspective, it is absolutely perfect for that kind of peak, you know, we're only using it occasionally for a lot kind of scenario, kind of like your own version of the Super Bowl. Which is obviously why It's used for major things like the Super Bowl and so on, is that ability to scale up dramatically and then back down again. Now, I just want to delve into why video for external use. And when I'm talking about external use, I'm talking here about why would you want to talk to your customers or your students or, you know, those people that are outside your organisations on it. So I think I talked a little bit at the start about how video content has become king in terms of marketing, and it really is. It's a well-known fact today that for any customer or any person on the web is going to gravitate towards video content well before they gravitate towards anything else. It's the only thing that will hold most people's train of attention for long enough to be worthwhile, and it's therefore the thing that people, well, you know, it's the thing that people are going to find on your website. But there's a lot of challenges with getting video out on the web, and a lot of people aren't good at it. And I think one of the key messages that comes out of kind of the why media services question is the kind of video that you're creating and whether or not you're creating the first video content in the first place. So most people, when they look at the content that they have, and they go, "Oh, we've got to put some video up for customers to get to for customers to get," we'll stick it on YouTube. Right. Now, there's some fundamental problems with YouTube. There's some great things about YouTube, and there's some fundamental problems with this. It's not to say that media services is the answer to YouTube, or you should use it instead. I think there's just some things you need to be aware of, right? So, and I'll drill into those in the next slide. And the other thing to keep in mind is that apps very much are the future of the web. Right? So I have some particular, you know, thoughts on apps versus internet and apps versus intranet. I'll talk about that again on the next couple of slides too. Right, so let's talk about YouTube. So YouTube is definitely the home of video content. But that doesn't mean that's where video content should be. So YouTube is not secure, firstly. Right? That's the first thing. Anybody can download anything off YouTube and do whatever they want with it because there's no content protection, right, whatsoever. And that's not a bad thing. It's okay if you're happy for people to do that with your content. And it's okay if you have something that you want to be, the kind of content that makes its own way across the internet and gets shared and all that stuff, right? If you want it to be viral, that's fine. And another problem with it is that a lot of people put content up on YouTube that is not for YouTube, right? Because YouTube is a social media platform, is a social platform, it's made for viral content. So content that goes up on there ideally needs to be high quality, needs to be the right length, and needs to be the kind of content that people are going to share and comment on. So any video that's on YouTube that has, for example, comments disabled is clearly in the wrong place because it's missing the point of the platform. And any video that's up there that was just some video that an organisation made and didn't know where to put it, so stuck it on YouTube, and it's, you know, some guy talking on stage, is clearly not the right place for it either, because that's not the kind of content that's going to go viral. It's not the kind of content that people are going to want to share. And it's also not the kind of content that YouTube will work out someone should go see next after the video that they've just watched. YouTube has all sorts of mechanisms in it for serving up the right content to people after they've watched a video. And if you've got content on there that just doesn't meet those requirements, doesn't meet those rules, isn't the right kind of thing, there's no point at all in having it there because no one is going to follow the stream to get to it. Right. So that's all fine, right? It just means just be wary that, you know, from an organisational perspective, there is a waste of time putting some things on YouTube. And a big problem with YouTube is that it's very easy for your message to get hijacked on there. So if you put a YouTube viewer on your homepage and put your corporate video on there, unless you've configured things up properly, and you can configure things up better, but you know, there's still a great chance that if someone comes and watches the video on YouTube or watches it on your homepage, the thing that they're going to get next is not necessarily what you might want them to get next. So it's a very quick path to from watching your corporate video on YouTube to seeing all the customer complaints about your company or seeing the competitor's video content. And those kinds of problems are can be very prevalent on the platform. Right, so YouTube, so YouTube then is right for the right video. It's right for the video that is well produced, is made to be shared, is made to be commented on, and that you're happy to put up there and is good quality. It's not right for anything else. And it's certainly not right for anything where you want to be able to control the message and you're not worried about what people might do. Or you are worried about what people might do with it. And that kind of brings us on then to the real perfect use case for media services, which is putting video content inside apps. Right, so, and it is really easy to do this. So apps are really the new websites, right? When a company like, I don't want to name brands, so pick any big organisation, any big retailer wants to do an online commerce site today, they don't build a website. They build an app. Because customers will go to the app store first to find the app, to find the organisation they want before they'll go to the website. And I think today's new generation of up-and-coming youngsters probably don't even realise what the web actually is. The web to them is an app store. Right, so if you've got customers out there, particularly if you're in consumer land, or I would say education as well, keeping connection with them through apps is the best way to go. Because really for them and for mobile devices, the internet, the web might as well not exist. Now, apps are also great because they can keep a personal connection with your customers. And so things like notification services that you can do in apps, things like location awareness that you can do in apps, much harder to do on the web, much less successful on the web. So if you want a really strong, then that allows you to create a really strong connection with your customer that where you can say, for example, trigger off a conversation with them or trigger off some kind of action with them at the right time. And apps and video, then that's obviously really, that's combining the future of the internet with, well, the other future of the internet, right? So so I think when I really look at Azure Media Services and what should it be for, it's really for getting curated video content out to your, for external use, getting curated content out to your customers inside a container that isn't a viral kind of social container, right? And then there's another set of content that goes to YouTube and does wonderful things there. Okay. So now that I've been through that, and hopefully that was okay, right? I know that there's not a lot of conversation about what video is for necessarily. So I just wanted to cover that first to make sure that we were all on the same page about what is your media services is for before we get into what it is. Okay, so Azure is a big, complex beast. And in actual fact, as complicated as Azure Media Services is, that's it there. It's that little yellow box, right? They're the two bits that we want to talk about, although I think the key point is that because, this is what we see in successful applications, because Azure Media Services is part of Azure, it works with the rest of the platform as well. So it combines really well with machine learning, and it combines really well with storage, and it combines really well with Active Directory and security and so on, right? So you do have all of the strength of Azure to play with, but the bit that we want to focus on today is the bit in the yellow box. So this is what the bit in the yellow box really is. So this is Now, this is not an architecturally correct slide for Azure Media Services, because there is, in actual fact, no architecture slide for Azure Media Services. This is just my best stab at drawing up what Azure Media Services would look like if it was an architecture slide. So you see the Windows Azure box there. The things that line up with that above it are the things that run on Azure that are a part of the platform. The bits at either end are the bits that you do either before or after. So on the left-hand side, and I'll drill into each of these in detail in the following slides, right? But it's really a pipeline that goes from the left to the right. So on the left-hand side, we either create content, on-demand content that we've pre-recorded, or we create live content. And Azure Media Services, well, you know, it does the World Cup and so on, does live content really well. And I'll talk about how live content works, and I'll talk about how pre-recorded or on-demand content works. And they both, and it works equally well for both of them. But they both go through different pipelines. I'll go through both of those. Then once you've got it in there, there's a process for getting it in there. Once you've created it, got it in there. Sorry, they don't have a slide down here, a screen down here for me to see. Now then we have to go, then we can go through scheduling of encoding jobs, of protecting the content using DRM, of converting it into whatever format we need it converted into so that we can stream it back out again. Azure Media Services has a whole advertising platform on it that can do all sorts of complex advertising scenarios. So you can pretty much be your own TV station. In fact, with all of this, you could, in effect, be your own TV station. It has that much power. All sorts of post-processing that you can do with it, package it up, run analytics, and then put it out through the CDN. And at the same time, you can run analytics on who's watching it and what's going on and who's using it and all that stuff, and then broadcast it out to the players. Right. So that pipeline, if you like, following across from left to right, is what happens inside the platform. All right. So, just starting now to go through step by step what's going on. So firstly, if we talk about on-demand video. So this is stuff that you have pre-created somewhere inside your organization. It could be stuff that you've, you know, recorded off the quarterly town hall. It could be stuff that you've allowed your staff to create themselves. Or it could be, and I would suggest increasingly, it could be stuff that you've video that you've recorded from inside apps, you know, about, I don't know, exams, kids doing performing arts exams. Certainly seen that scenario. It could be stuff that you've recorded about insurance claims, you know, or anything, right? And I think the amount of storage that you have available on the cloud means that if you really think about it, you will find a myriad of scenarios for why you should be creating content to save to the cloud. So anyway, one way or another, you record your content, you create your content. Again, doesn't matter what format it's in, as long as it's, you know, it's a video file. You upload it to Azure Media Services into Blob Storage. All sorts of mechanisms, obviously, for getting there. Programmatically, because it's just an upload to Blob Storage after all, but you can also upload through the Azure Media Services portal, and there's a tool that you can install that I'll tell you about at the end of the talk. But one way or another, create the video content and put it into Blob Storage. Okay, so I'm not going to go through these, but I thought it was just worthwhile putting up. There is all the formats supported by Azure Media Services, which pretty much covers everything. Right? And really, the aim that Microsoft has there is to allow you to create content. It's not so much about this is different to downloading stuff off Pirate Bay, right? This is about what content, what tool am I using to create content, and it could be Adobe Premiere or something like that. And being able to take that raw content straight out of there, upload it into media services, and it will look after it. The most prevalent ones are the ones in bold with the MP4 files. Okay. Now, that was pre-recorded content. Now, for live content, this is a little bit more complicated, but way more exciting. So, we'll start right at the camera. So, there's all sorts of cameras and all sorts of ways you can record content. I'll talk about that in a sec. So we record content, we encode it, and we can encode it either on-premise using an on-premise encoding system. I'll talk about that in a sec. Or you can have, or you can upload it as raw video live, raw video streamed up to as your media services, and it will encode it for you. So one way or the other. So that's the basic process. Now, I just want to go through, I'll go through each of those steps. So, cameras. So this is where things can get a little interesting, right? I was talking before about the problem with the content that people put on YouTube. And if you're creating content, well, the world that we're creating content for today is a world that is very savvy. So your staff have, are consumers when they're not at work. They have the same level of expectation about the quality of content that they get to see that they have when they're looking at video content on YouTube, at well-produced video content on YouTube. The good news is it's really easy today to get really good cameras. So a Windows phone would be a perfectly good video camera for media services, as long as you put it in a tripod, so you're not wobbling it around everywhere, and as long as you've got decent lighting, and as long as you've got maybe a backdrop, and maybe ultimately you end up with a studio to be able to do this stuff well. Right? So, it's one thing if you're talking about recording a pan around a car after for an insurance claim, that's fine. But if you're doing stuff to either send out to your staff, or even worse, if you're doing stuff to send out to customers, then you want it to be really good. Right? The good thing is it doesn't cost a lot today to do it, but probably what you want to do is set a room aside somewhere that is a studio in effect. And you can kit it out for all of about $2,000 to be a good studio, or you can spend an absolute fortune and kit it out properly to be a really good studio. And if you're going to get serious enough at this stuff, then maybe it's worth doing that. And then you need an encoder. Well, you don't actually need an encoder, because you could just record your video footage on your Windows phone, upload it to Azure Media Services, and let it do the encoding, and that's fine. Or you can get something like this thing, which is a NewTek TriCaster model 400 and something, just as an example. I'm not necessarily promoting their products, but just as an example. Now, this kind of puppy, this does multiple camera feeds in. So you can imagine if you're recording the news, right, and you've got multiple cameras or something like that, and you want to be able to cut from one camera to another, it does that. It does titles, it does the green screen stuff, so you can put someone in in front of a green screen and make it look like they're on the set of CNN or something like that. And it does all the transitions between shots and all those sorts of things, right? These aren't really that expensive. And really what it is a really powerful PC with a control surface. And it's got enough decent video cards in there and enough CPU grunt to be able to encode on the fly and handle the transitions and so on live, which is not really that hard to do. And they don't cost that much, but if you're going to be serious, then this is the kind of stuff that you want to think about getting. All right. And they also support kind of like an editing workflow and things like that. Now, Media Services has a set of encoders that it's able to work with. Just one other point before I jump. I'll just jump back one slide. The other point about these guys is some of these encoders are able, and it depends on what model you buy, are able to support multiple cameras in and multiple feeds out. So really here I'm talking about, really custom kinds of scenarios, but I just wanted to sort of share it to show how far media servers can actually let you go. You can go all the way from someone with a mobile phone, through to I've got a setup with 4 or 8 cameras, and I'm streaming out, you know, half a dozen different channels of streaming media onto the internet. And media services and gear like this will allow you to do all that. And that stuff is not really that expensive, you know, for a corporation. So if you want to get into that kind of thing, then it's entirely achievable. But it's just interesting to see what you can achieve with the product. It really is a product that has no bounds to it, and you can do anything from, you know, recording something on a mobile phone for half a dozen people through to the FIFA World Cup on the same piece of technology. It's really quite amazing, the cloud today. There's a set of products that Azure Media Services works with. It only works with a few encoders. And which encoder you want, so that was a TriCaster on the previous page, but I'm not necessarily recommending these. Each of these are in different price ranges and have different capabilities. So you kind of pick the one that has the right scenario for you, but it has to be one of those ones. And it doesn't really matter whether it's smooth streaming or RTMP. Media Services slips it up either way. Okay, now that we've got the video content in, we'll go through the pipeline that happens with the content when it's inside Media Services and how it gets it back out again. But just to talk about that, first we have to talk about adaptive streaming and codecs. So, you know when you watch YouTube and the video will play, and if you're on a really bad connection like I am at home, it will pause and, you know, and the little bar has to get ahead before it can start playing again because it needs to buffer. Media Services doesn't do that. It works in a different way. It can do that if it's talking to a Flash player, which it can do. But normally when it's working with the player that comes with Windows or comes with the Xbox or comes with Windows Phone, or if it's working with the normal player that comes as a part of HTML5 browser like Chrome or Safari, it does what's called adaptive streaming. And adaptive streaming is to say, it has multiple different files on the server that are in multiple different bit rates. So you might have a 720p version, probably no more than that, because it's streaming after all. You might have a 720p version, a 480p version, and, you know, and maybe something, or, you know, another couple under that for really awful connections or people with really small screen devices. And it will pick, the player will intelligently pick which stream it wants, which file it wants, depending on the amount of bandwidth available. So in actual fact, if you watch something like the Xbox, right, and you watch, you know, you're sitting there watching content on the Xbox, you might see this, and you see Netflix do this sometimes. I don't know if Netflix runs on Azure Media Services, but I've certainly seen this behavior from it, where it will look pixelated and then look really sharp and then look pixelated again. That's it swapping streams to find the one that is optimized for the particular time. Right, so the whole aim of the playback that Media Services does is to not have pausing in it. So it downgrades the quality of the content so it can keep it streaming until it reaches the point where, you know, whatever the worst quality file that it has, you know, can't be streamed successfully, and then it runs out of go. But it'll try and keep streaming through that, right? So that means that one of the things that Media Services does when you're encoding files is to take whatever the file is that you upload and encode it into different formats, right? So you end up with a 720p and a 480p and so on and so on and so on. Right? So the best, the optimal output, and you can output in lots of different formats as well, right? But the optimal output is H.264. Which is the format that is supported by HTML5 browsers out of the box and is also supported by all the Windows devices. And it can do other ones as well, but that's the best, the recommended one. Right. Okay, so with that explanation then, kind of need to know that before we can talk about, okay, how do we encode on the platform, right? So now that we've got our file uploaded, so we're talking back about not live, we're talking back about on-demand content, right? So pre-recorded on-demand content. So we have an uploaded file, we feed it into the encoder, It spits out multiple bitrate files, and it can also spit out other things like thumbnails, right, which are handy for when you want to put, you know, so you can have that spit out a thumbnail every 5 minutes or something like that of the file while it's encoding it, and it'll slip into a directory, and you go through and pick out the right one that you want to have as your thumbnail for the file when you put it on the web page. So that stuff happens inside there. Then you apply DRM to it. Now, DRM is digital rights management. That is the encryption of the stream so that it can only be unlocked by a player that has a key to unlock it. And if you get hold of the file or you copy the file or whatever, you can't play it unless you've got the key. Right? So that means, I've got more information on DRM later. And then you've got some post-processing stuff that I'll talk about later. Right? So that's the step of, okay, I've got the file on Azure in blob storage, and I turn it into a set of streams that I can then use to stream down. And then the same thing for live video. Live video is quite different because there's all sorts of amazing things you can do with live video. So we'll go through this step by step, right? So the incoming stream out of your on-premise encoder or out of the in-the-cloud encoder, then goes into this encoding step where you can feed in. And at that step, you see down the bottom there, it says preview. At that step, there's a live preview that's available on a screen, like, you know, through the web, right? Yeah, so you hook up your browser to Azure and you can see the video playing. And you've got options there to insert advertising into it, for example, on the fly. So someone scores a goal, stick an ad in, right? You can actually do that with Azure Media Services. At the same time, and so each of these files, by the way, each of these streams, by the way, that's going into Azure Media Services into the live processing is called a channel. Right? So you have multiple channels coming in, one or multiple channels coming in, and you can cut those channels into programs also using this preview tool. So you can go, okay, the last hour of that, I want to make that a particular program, and then that will cut that off and stick it into the same spot that you would, well, in effect, would stick it into the same place that your pre-recorded content is being uploaded into blob storage, right? So you can take a live stream using media services and put advertising in it as it goes and cut programs out of it as it goes. And you can also set up scheduling so that you can say, okay, I want every hour to be cut off as a separate program out of the live stream. And it will do all that for you automatically. So you end up with, you know, the viewers on the other end watching the live stream and the stuff being recorded down. And the other thing it will do for you too is buffer. So, and you can set up how long the buffer is, so that if somebody who's watching the soccer wants to go to the loo, they can press pause and media services will pause it at, you know, at its end and then resume playback again. And it kind of buffers all these different streams for everybody that's watching it all at the same time. So amazingly clever piece of technology, right? And then for the live stream, it can also apply DRM to it. So for example, you can make people pay to watch whatever content it is that you've run. Effectively, yeah, DRM is to protect your content, either so that you make people pay to watch it or use it for, say, if you only want stuff to be viewable inside your organisation, people can only view it if they have the key. Right. Okay. Now, we go for a little while. Do you want to pause for questions? I don't know, I've covered a fair bit of content and I sense it's been a little... Is everybody okay? You're all wandering along okay with me? No questions yet? Okay. All right. So let's have a look at, just a quick look at DRM. Here we go. Where'd you go? There we go. Okay. So DRM, as I was saying, that makes sure that people can only watch the content if they have a key to be able to watch it. So the idea is that the content is coming through one IP address, one port, and you basically pass a token, the player that's unlocking, that's watching the content has access to a token that you might give them through, some kind of login mechanisms or something like that, and they can only unlock the content if they have the token. So there's multiple different ways of doing DRM. Media Services supports either AES 128, which is primarily used by Flash. It supports PlayReady or Widevine, which is commonly used by, so PlayReady is the big one used by Microsoft, so Xbox and Windows and so on all support PlayReady. And Widevine is used by is primarily used by the Google devices. And so it supports those three mechanisms of encrypting content. And this slide's a little wrong. So AMS is able to encrypt on the fly against the key that you give it, and it can be the DRM provider for anything other than AES. So depending on, if you're doing smooth streaming, which is what most people do, right? And I think if you're talking about an internal scenario, you'll probably be using PlayReady, because PlayReady is just supported by Windows out of the box, right? So any Windows device, any Windows phone, any Xbox and so on just works with PlayReady out of the box. So you set up media services to do your encryption, you give the key to the player, and Bob's your uncle, you can unlock the content. And if anybody doesn't have the key on their device, they're not able to. Plus there are, and probably something I should have mentioned right at the start, any of the pieces of the puzzle here, there are alternative providers for them, or you could do it yourself on premises. So you don't have to use Azure Media Services to do DRM, for example. There are other companies like EasyDRM, for example, that you could use instead, should you want to. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the Media Services DRM. It was just where I thought to mention this bit of the topic, right? That pipeline that Media Services has is pretty much they are all a set of succinct steps. So you don't have to go the whole way through inside Media Services. You could do the encoding yourself and then, the DRM in Media Services, or do the encoding in Media Services and the DRM yourself. You can chop and change however you want and use different, and there's all sorts of different products and so on that are available to do each of the pieces. So anyway, the step after, well, not really the step after DRM, but as well as DRM, we've got this processing step that Media Services can do, which is kind of like an additional processing step. So at that point, there's a really cool set of things you can do with it. You can index the content at that point, and Microsoft has written an indexing tool that is able to turn the audio track in a video into text, and you feed it a custom dictionary. And the right dictionary for the right country that the content's recorded in, for the right nationality of speakers, and it will quite happily turn with a pretty good degree of accuracy text in videos into audio in videos into text on the fly. So that means you can even get to the point of doing doing captions on live content with it, which is pretty damn amazing, really, when you think about it. And it will apply the caption over the video live, or it will spit out, or you can give it, for example, a pre-recorded file, and it will spit out a whole piece of text that is everything that was said inside the video, so that you can put that as the, I don't know if you see those things where there's the video and then underneath the video in the web page is everything that everybody said inside the video. It's using that technology to do that, right? So it's not someone sitting there typing it all out. Media Services just does that for you. So that makes your video content searchable. So you don't necessarily have to put that stuff on the web. you can in fact search for spoken words inside your video content using a tool that Media Services provides that uses the fact that it created the text, you know, that it's able to read the text out of the video. So that's pretty cool. And then there's other, in fact, one of our, another, someone from our company is presenting in the room next door at the moment, talking about a whole lot of machine learning scenarios using Project Oxford, which can hook into this quite nicely so that you could, for example, recognise faces out of videos, recognise, you know, people out of videos or people out of live content. This starts getting really scary. Recognise the emotions of the people that are in videos, and all sorts of really scary things, right? All of which you can do at this point, right? Yeah. And then you can also add special effects and so on at this point. Right, so that's really, I think that's really cool. Oh, sorry, and the other thing at this point, you might have seen a demo of a technology from Microsoft that they had about a month ago or so that they made a bit of a splash around about called Hyperlapse, which is you can feed in like video from your GoPro riding a bike down a path. You can feed it into Hyperlapse, the Hyperlapse tool, which is a website, and it will spit it back out as smooth video. So it will take all the bumps and stuff out and spit it back out as smooth video. That's actually using Media Services with a filter applied at this particular point in the process to do the Hyperlapse stuff. So, yeah. So you can have a go at that if you want to have a go at Media Services. All right. Now, so we've applied DRM, we've encoded the file, we've got our different versions of the file ready, our different copies of the file at different bit rates ready to play, and now we get down to the playing it. So, when you're playing, sorry. So I talked about how in the live stream, Media Services applies the ads on the fly. It actually applies the ads at this step in the process if you're doing, if you want to apply ads, when you're doing on demand. So we start off with the manifest, which is an XML file. You actually point your player at the manifest, not necessarily at the stream. And the manifest contains the information about where all the different bitrate streams are available, and where the file is it's going to use for to do the advertising. I'll talk about that in the next slide. And then it will then the player will then talk to Media Services to, you know, using the information that was in the manifest to pull down the right media stream depending on the quality of the bandwidth that it's got to be able to play it and the size of the screen that it's got to be able to play it in. Right, and you don't really need to worry about it much other than that. But that happens at that point. And then the processing step on the end there is it then applying advertising and other things to the stream while it's playing. So the player that comes in, that media player supports, has smarts in it to be able to do all sorts of stuff with advertising and so on that I'll tell you about in a sec. So the story doesn't necessarily stop when you've created the stuff on Media Services. It carries all the way through to the player. Okay, so Media Services supports, or the player, and by player, right, we don't just mean the players that are inside Windows. A player inside a HTML5 browser will also do this stuff. So it supports three types of advertising, and I don't know if you want to do advertising, but let's talk about it anyway. It supports three types of advertising. Linear, which is your traditional TV advertising, so it stops the video so it can play the ad. And you can put those in at points in the... So you create a file through one of these standards that's listed there. They're all pretty much the same thing. So through one of those different standards that's there. You create a file that is in the manifest that we covered on the previous slide, right? And you can put in that file at 35 seconds, play this ad, hyperlink to ad, you know, at such and such time, play this ad, right? And it will stop the player play the ad, take control of the player so a person can't skip the ad if you want, and then start playing again, right? It can also do non-linear ads, which are the kind of like overtyped or, you know, display ad that's over the video footage as it's playing, you know, that the TV stations use for the show that's coming up next sort of stuff. You can do that. And you can play linked companion ads so that in a window beside the video, it will put another window with, you know, whatever content you want to put in there that can be synced with the content that's in the video. Right. And then it supports click-through inside the player and so on. So that if when somebody's watching it, they like to want to buy the car that's in the ad, they can click on the ad and it will take them to the website and record the fact that happened and all that sort of stuff. And so it does all that too. Right, getting down to the tail end now. So just a word about CDN. CDN's a big deal when you're talking about Azure Media Services, right? Because it all comes down to cost and performance. Right? So I suppose to explain the concept of CDN, right, just in case somebody doesn't know. So Media Services has a hub. Media Services does exist in the hub in Sydney and the hub in Melbourne. Right? But if you're in Perth, you've still got to run across Australia to get the content, which can lead to performance issues. CDN is about saying, okay, so I want to cache that content to a node that's close to me, so that I'm not going all the way to there to get it. It was particularly important when there wasn't actually a data center in Australia and it was in Singapore and you had to go all the way to there, then CDNs became even more important. Right? And so there's different types of CDNs from different vendors. And I won't necessarily plug one over the other, but you want to have a look at where are your customers and where are the nodes for the CDNs, because different CDN vendors have different numbers of nodes. Right? And so therefore, you know, you might find that, you know, so if you've got a provider that's got 5 nodes in Australia, it's still likely that you may end up a fair way from one. Or if you've got one that's got 300 nodes in Australia, it's more likely you'll end up a lot closer, right? So you just want to work that out against the kinds of things that you're doing. And one of the things that is particularly important with that too is that normally content out of a CDN provider is much cheaper than the content out of Azure Media Services, right? So there's a cost for streaming out of Azure Media Services that is less than the cost of streaming out of a CDN provider. So what the CDN provider will do, you'll hit the CDN, and if it's the first time that piece of content has been streamed, it will grab it from Azure and cache it locally. And so you're paying the cost of getting it out of the CDN after that, not the cost of getting it out of Azure. Right? And that works for live streaming as well, believe it or not. So it will cache the live stream at the CDN and then you get it out of there. You know, the next person that's watching it, even though it's live, there'll still be enough of it cached in the CDN to mean that you're not hitting Azure Media Services all the time, right? So it's a cost thing, right? So if you want to do Azure Media Services, that's great, but also think about maybe you should be looking at CDN at the same time. And in fact, if you're running like a decent website, then you should have CDN anyway, because CDN is not just about video content. CDN is about any kind of content. Right. Oh, sorry, I should have put that up. That's the CDN diagram. Right, so that's really saying it sits in front of Azure Media Services and caches the content. Now, if you're talking about using Azure Media Services for internal stuff, you'll be interested in this diagram, which is not something that's documented anywhere, and we worked out ourselves. You can actually use IIS ARR forward proxy to cache media services inside the firewall. Right, so this is important because if you create a training video that 500 people inside your company are going to watch, remember, even though it's kind of being, you know, media services is great because it lets everybody watch it, you're going to have 500 people going across the internet to get that video, even if you've got a CDN provider, because then they'll be going to the CDN to get it, but they're still going through your firewall to get it. Right? using the configuring up the IIS IRR proxy. We've got a blog post on our website to do this, right? So on wildmouse.com, right? So if you configure that up properly, in effect, that can become an internal CDN, which will mean that all of your players will go, all of your 500 people will go to that. Or the first person, yeah, you know, the first one will stream it down, cache it at the proxy, and then everybody else will get it from there, right? Which means if you're going to use it for internal training and stuff like that, it makes things a lot easier. All right, so the player itself, I've already covered some of this, but just to skip through some of it again. So the media services player provides everything you need out of the box, and it comes with Windows. It's just the player that Windows uses, or the Xbox users, or Windows Phone users, right? So the thing that comes up that plays video is actually quite a complicated little beast, and is provided by the Azure Media Services team. Flash Player can also consume, or media services can also stream content to be consumed by the Flash Player. The Silverlight Player in Windows 7 supports PlayReady, so it's also already configured up to work with it. I'm running out of time. And there's an SDK that'll allow you to create Windows Store apps. All right, I'm running out of time, I think, so I'll skip through this bit fairly quickly. If you want to try media services, it's actually built into Office 365 Video. So the Office 365 Video tool, or the video thing that comes with Office 365, is Azure Media Services, minus a whole lot of the smarts. Right? So it doesn't do a whole lot of the clever bits that media services does, but it does. But it does allow you to upload. And you'll notice when you upload a video and then it sits there for ages before it appears, that's it encoding it. That's the media services encoding step happening, and then it appears, and then it plays it in the media services player, right? So that little thing, but it's missing a whole lot of the other smarts, of course, because it's just a cut-down pre-packaged thing, but it does do it, right? So if your requirements for video are met by that, then beauty. Right? And then there's this puppy, which is a tool that the media services team created that allows you to control media services using an app, more an application that runs in a Windows application, right? And that allows you to do pretty much everything that you want to do in media services through that tool, right? So you can create live channels, you can upload video, you can encode it, you can create channels to play back and all that stuff. Yeah. So there's a growing list of partners that work with media services. I don't know who a lot of these people are. Yep, there you go. And that's about it. Now, the one thing I wanted to show you, there's an architecture for... I meant to have a bit more time to spend on this. An architecture for an app for something that we design for media services, and we have designed for media services. So Express Route, you'll notice in the middle, is great if you're doing media services because it provides you with reliable, high-quality, high-speed bandwidth, which is really good if you're doing video. So you can see here we've got some pre-recorded video going to Blob Storage. We've got the on-site encoding going into the ingestion things and producing the previews, creating the programs, and all ending up in the Blob Storage. You know, we've got streaming coming straight we've got streaming coming from the preview down to a management app that we built. And then we've got the programs being streamed through the CDN down to the viewers. Well, that makes sense? You sort of see that? So that's kind of, this was kind of the whole thing coming together, right? This is the whole architecture coming together on one slide. All right, so I might leave it on that, and that's kind of the end. So I've got almost no time, but a couple of minutes for questions. Has anybody got any questions? Yeah.
If I was to use this in our solution, what we would want to do is have custom players which actually download the media files completely onto the players and complete the case from there. Would Azure Media Services try and prevent that, or would that be possible?
Okay, so the question is, sorry for the sake of the video. The question is, can you download the content and then play it through a custom player? Without using media services to do the streaming? Yes, you can. So you can replace any of those parts of the component, any of those parts of the entire puzzle, not use them, replace them with something else, you know, mix and match however you want. So that means you could encode, create all your video files, and then download them. And in fact, you can provide hyperlinks to your whoever you want to be able to download files, right? Because you know how you can download files off Channel 9? Yeah, that's just that, right? So yeah, absolutely. Sorry, and right. Okay, how does Azure license it? Right, in all sorts of different ways, in all sorts of different places. So, and I did mean to skip through that on the way through. Right, so blob storage, so your storage of the videos in the first place. Right, the CPU cycles needed to encode, and then the streaming units. That do the play, the do the streaming. You pay for them by the. Oh, each unit can do so much streaming, and you pay for each unit. Okay, so there's a number of things that you can pay for. There's a number of spots where you pay for it. It does end up very cost effective, right, as a solution, but you need to be aware that there are a number of spots where you pay. So you need to be mindful of. Right, and if you heard that thing about, okay, so you upload a video and then you end up with multiple. Stream, you know, multiple bitrate copies of that video. You know, and if you've got a live video, you can cut videos off it and so on. Your amount of blob storage used can kind of balloon if you get greedy at it, right? and then you're paying for the amount of encoding and the amount of streaming that you're doing, right? So it's all on the Azure website, right? But I think if you can really manage it really well, if you're careful with how you manage it and careful with how you do it. But if you're going to do something for streaming to relatively small numbers of people, I'm talking not the FA Cup, but if you're talking to, you know, relatively manageable numbers of people inside your organisation, really cost-effective solution for that. Yes, there is. So there's an ingress cost. Actually, that was the other one, right? So there's the copy up, there's the file upload, there's the blob storage, there's the encoding, there's the additional processing that you might want to do, and there's the egress cost.
So if you were distributing that content, say, in a single workplace, you'd be better off having some sort of local service to store the content.
And that's why I talked about that. That proxy, right? Using the internal proxy to do that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Then this process is anyway it can give a rights to the particular people in organization for this content.
Yes. So can you give rights to particular people to see particular content? Yes, absolutely. That's what DRM's for. Right, so you need an understanding of DRM. So, and I didn't want to through this talk. I didn't want to go into. Obviously, you know, I've ran out of time and I've only skimmed. You know, I wanted to do the end-to-end. I couldn't go too much into detail in any particular area. But DRM is the answer to that. And yes, absolutely, you can restrict content to certain people, certain things, right? Plus, you should be able to do that too through AD and security that way on the files at the other end that people are attempting to get to. Right? So two ways to do it, depending on which is the right one for you. Yeah. All right, I think that's probably it because... Our next speaker's waiting patiently for me to get off the stage. So thank you, everybody. So don't forget to do your, I'm supposed to tell you to not forget to do your thingies, your session evaluations. But cool, thank you very much. I hope that was helpful.